Thanks to a generous donor, we've purchased a building for the new studios and offices of Issues Etc., Lutheran Public Radio, and The Word of the Lord Endures Forever.
The donor will match up to $200,000 for the purchase and renovation.
The entire cost is approximately $375,000.
You can view an architect's rendering and make a special tax-deductible gift at issuesetc.org
or call 618-223-8385.
Thanks for your consideration.
We're going to be addressed the original sin of this country. 400 years old. It's the original sin. Slavery.
The Equality Act is a nuclear bomb on faith communities and any communities or individuals who have a traditional understanding of marriage and sexuality.
If your repentance is purely horizontal, and if it's designed really to curry favor with the world, then that's a repentance that itself needs to be repented of. That is a reflection of a world-oriented, not a God-oriented mentality.
You don't get any more close to the heart of the matter than fathers, mothers, and their children living together in a household. And wherever his word is, there the blessing will be also.
Taiwan the Xinjiao Shi and Ai Ting Issues, etc. That Taiwan missionaries love Issues, etc.
The headline in the Jerusalem Post reads, Davidic dynasty symbol found in Jerusalem once in a lifetime discovery. The capitals of at least three columns were found. They didn't expect to find them, but they did. And it is a big story, not only for those who have discovered these things, but also for the case for the existence of King David and his kingdom. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. live on this Tuesday afternoon, September the 8th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to be talking about the discovery of column capitals linked to King David. Dr. Craig Evans will join us. He's author of numerous books, including Jesus and His World, The Archaeological Evidence. Then we'll spend some time with Dr. Alvin Schmidt, Professor Emeritus of Sociology at Illinois College, talking about the influence of Christianity on labor and economic freedom. Joining us to discuss the discovery of column capitals linked to King David, Dr. Craig Evans, Distinguished Professor of Christian Origins and the Dean of the School of Christian Thought at Houston Baptist University. He's author of many books, including Jesus and His World. Dr. Evans, welcome back.
Thank you very much. Good to be back.
Is there now irrefutable evidence for the existence of King David and of his kingdom?
Well, I think so. Some people, of course, think they can refute any kind of evidence, but I think for reasonable, open-minded people, the evidence just keeps piling up. And these three capitals that are very ornate, very upscale by the standards of the age, dating to the time they do date, where they were found, I think it's just more evidence that there was a royal palace that was quite grand in its time that would indicate a capital of a kingdom that tied with the House of David inscription found up north at Tel Dan indicates that the House of David was a reality, that the kingdom was substantial in size for that period of time, and so there's really no basis for skepticism any longer.
So let's talk about what was discovered there. Why is it being called a once-in-a-lifetime discovery?
Well, we have remains that are either part of the palace itself or from somebody connected to the dynasty. We're talking about somewhere around the year 700 BC, give or take, perhaps at the reign of Hezekiah or shortly after him, perhaps the time of Isaiah the prophet. And, you know, we have pretty good historical record for that, both in the book of Isaiah itself, but also in the writing called 2 Kings. And we know about Israel's relationship to Egypt at that time, but also the danger Israel faced by the Assyrian threat. And so the pieces just keep fitting together. So archaeological finds support the ancient text. And, of course, what we're finding now is the work continues in and around Jerusalem. that there was a substantial complex of administrative buildings. There was a royal palace. There was, of course, Solomon's Temple on the Temple Mount, which, you know, it's become fashionable in some circles to deny these days, you know, temple mythicists. But the archaeology that keeps surfacing, and anymore I've grown so used to it, I expect to find something new every single year, shows that the biblical narratives are talking about a real kingdom, a real dynasty, real boundaries, and that what we have recounted in the books of Samuel and Kings is not mythology, but actual history.
Okay, let's talk about the location where these discoveries were made. What's significant about it?
Well, the city of Jerusalem was the capital city. Most kingdoms function that way, not like modern countries today, but they were city-states is what they really were. And so you had a very important city, and then its boundaries extended out from it. And so Rome was at the center of the Roman Empire, and Jerusalem was at the center of the Davidic Empire. And that's the way it was. You know, the Babylonian Empire was centered in the ancient city of Babylon. And so we expect to find in the city center significant buildings, evidence of wealth, for example. That is always an indicator, because like the modern countries today, like Washington, you know, or London or Paris, you know, whatever the city, whatever the country's capital is, money and wealth invariably wind up going there. And so these beautiful, ornate capitals, and capitals, of course, rest on top of a pillar, indicate wealth. These are not crude. This isn't something simple that you might find at a fortress or an outpost far away from Jerusalem. But this is one more indication that we're talking about wealth and power, government power, political power centered in Jerusalem, which would not be the case if Jerusalem was itself a small village and if there was no empire. So it becomes circumstantial evidence that supports the House of David inscription found, you know, 28 years ago at the north end of Israel near Lebanon. It's just one more indication there really was a kingdom, a powerful kingdom, and that the head of this kingdom, the head of the dynasty, was David himself.
So what about these particular capitals? And they're talking about is a symbol of the Davidic kingdom. Are there other capitals that have been found that are similar, dating to a similar time?
Yeah. And these are not the only artifacts of this nature. I mean, these are they're very impressive and well-preserved. That's one of the things that's remarkable about these. I've read the reports. I haven't seen them myself. I didn't know about their discovery until it was reported. They were hidden. They seemed to be very deliberately, the three of them, placed where they wouldn't be found. And it's probably in the aftermath of a destruction, perhaps the Babylonian destruction itself. I'm not sure. It's really interesting why that happened or who did it, but there wasn't, and that suggests that these capitals were valued, buried almost like treasure. And that is a curiosity. And I know the dig is continuing and other things are being found. And I hope more things are found that can help explain why it was or how it was these capitals were hidden away, what the purpose was. Usually you hide something like that. There's the anticipation of recovery and rebuilding. But that didn't happen. These remained there for 2,700 years and only recently have been found.
So the fact that they had not been repurposed, because it's pretty substantial pieces of stone that we're talking about here. And
oh, yes. It would be very difficult. No one individual could just pick one up. You'd have to have the strength of Hercules.
And if it had just been, you know, any old thing, it would have likely been put to a better use. It would have been incorporated into some other structure in some other way. The fact that at least the archaeologists believe that these were set aside seems very significant.
I think so. I agree. And that means the person that saw to their hiding knew perfectly well that they would be grabbed and put to use in a secondary fashion. And, of course, anybody who's visited ancient cities, ruins, and so on, whether in Israel or elsewhere in the Middle East, secondary use of buildings is commonplace. I watched with great interest over the last 30 years, nearly 30 years, in Jerusalem, the excavations mostly at the southwest corner of the Temple Mount as the level was taken down more than 30 feet. And you could see from the later Turkish period, the Ottoman Turkish Empire, you could see these large houses that had been assembled from various stones. And you'd see a decorated stone right in the middle of a wall. You'd see a pillar inside a wall, and the mix and the match of it all. And that's an example of secondary building. So you take the older, beautiful carved stones from the Greco-Roman period, the Herodian period, and you, or even further back, and then you pick them up. I mean, it's easier to deal with a stone that's already carved, you know, than to carve one out yourself. And so that's why these broken down stones, buildings that had collapsed from earthquakes or warfare, the stones would be gathered up and constructed into a new building. And so whoever hid these capitals, is my guess, hid them so that that would not happen to them, which I think is really interesting, whether it's to protect them from a secondary profane use or keep them from being hauled away. And sometimes decorated stones would be carried away hundreds of miles. So it's possible that it was being hidden away so that they wouldn't disappear, so that at some point it was anticipated they could be recovered and whatever the building used to be could be reconstructed. Whatever that plan was, it didn't happen. As I said, they remained hidden until very recently discovered.
Dr. Craig Evans is our guest. We're talking about the discovery of column capitals linked to King David. He's author of numerous books, including Jesus and His World, The Archaeological Evidence. We'll talk more about this discovery after the break.
The person who makes the claim bears the burden. Not the Christian. It's not the Christian's job to disprove their claim, not first.
Greg Kokel speaking at this year's Issues Etc. Making the Case conference.
The first step is to gather information with some form of the question, what do you mean by that? The second step is to reverse the burden of proof when the other person is making the claim with some form of the question, how did you come to that conclusion? And now this gives them a chance to give you a point of view with reasons in favor of it. Until they do that, you have nothing really to speak to because they haven't made a case of any kind. They just emoted.
You can watch and listen to Greg Kokel's presentation, Making the Case for Discussing Your Christian Convictions, on a recording of the 2020 Issues Etc. Making the Case conference. For a $250 tax-deductible gift, you can access an on-demand video stream or podcast. Order today at issuesetc.org.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
For your next family vacation, consider Our Beach House, a charming three-bedroom vacation rental on beautiful Siesta Key. Just off Sarasota, Florida, Siesta Key Beach, consistently voted America's best, is just 100 steps away. Whether you're watching the sunset over the Gulf of Mexico or frolicking in the warm surf, you and your family will fall in love with Siesta Key. Check us out at SiestaKeyRentalGenie.com or call Virginia at 941-266-1858.
LCMS Disaster Response provides guidance and assistance to congregations who seek to proclaim the gospel and show mercy in the wake of disasters. We can bring capacity to your congregation through on-site assessment, volunteer training and congregation preparedness, and through grants direct to your congregation. For more information, follow us on Facebook, keyword LCMS Disaster Response, or visit our website at lcms.org/disaster. That's lcms.org/disaster.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking with Dr. Craig Evans, Distinguished Professor of Christian Origins and Dean of the School of Christian Thought at Houston Baptist University, about a discovery of column capitals linked to King David. Ordinarily, Dr. Evans, the public doesn't know about these kinds of discoveries until sometimes years later. There's all kinds of vetting that needs to be done, and I'm sure that the scientists involved want to be really certain about what they announce when they do make an announcement. This one is almost a contemporaneous with the discovery itself. Why is that?
Well, as it says in the report, it's so important. They just didn't want to wait. Now, I suspect there's a little bit of politics there. I touched on it earlier in our first segment. What it is, there are these mythicists out there, these deniers, and it's extremely political. You might think it's just a bunch of academics, a bunch of scholars debating fine points, but it really isn't. There are people in the Middle East. There are people who are anti-Israel, let us say, and I want to be careful how I phrase it, but there are people who don't have Israel's best interest in mind. And one of the ways they argue, and one of the things that their constituents like to hear, is that Israel simply has no legitimacy. The Jewish people, have no business being in the Middle East. Israel never really existed. The whole thing is a myth. And what damages the myth claim is to say, well, here you have correlation with the Bible. The Bible story says there was this kingdom, there was a temple here. This is the capital city, Jerusalem. King David and a whole series of kings reigned over Israel for centuries right here in this land where we now live today. And so the archaeological evidence is very significant. And so I think there's increasingly interest in trotting it out instead of the way it's usually done. Something is found. You don't want to be embarrassed. You don't want it to turn out that you've misinterpreted it because you published it too quickly without a whole bunch of tests. And Todd, don't forget, there's been a lot of embarrassment in recent years with artifacts that have turned out to be fake. Artifacts that, you know, whether they're Dead Sea Scroll fragments or papyrus, or the Coptic Gospel of Jesus' wife a few years ago, things like that that have been coming to light. And I think some people have been burned a little bit, and there's a caution, which is understandable, not to announce things too quickly, interpreting them wrongly, or perhaps discovering that it's a hoax or whatever. So I think that's part of the caution. But the way these were found, there was absolutely no question of their antiquity. These did not surface, these decorated column capitals. They didn't surface in the antiquities market. They know exactly where they were when they found them. There was stratigraphy, that is, you date the layers as you dig down. They're certain that these things date somewhere between 600 and 700 BC. That is the last 100 years or so of the history of the Kingdom of Israel before the Babylonian Empire crushed Jerusalem and burned down the city and the temple. So these things were certain. It's not a hoax. It was just a question of further interpretation. But I think they wanted to come out and make the announcement because it really is important. And as I said in the first segment, this is just more evidence that there really was a royal palace, a royal administration located in Jerusalem, which in turn implies that there was a kingdom. And when you connect that up north to the Tel Dan inscription, that was a Syrian inscription, by the way, not a Jewish or Israelite inscription, but a Syrian inscription in Aramaic that refers to the house of David. And that dates to about 800 BC, or 100 years earlier than these three decorated capitals. So when you start tying this all together, it becomes inescapable. There really was a Davidic dynasty. There really was a unified kingdom of Israel in antiquity. And all of this matches the narrative that we actually have in the Bible, particularly in the books of Samuel and Kings.
There is a rendering in the Jerusalem Post story that kind of speculates as to how these capitals might have been incorporated into a structure. What could we conclude there?
Well, are you referring to the design itself?
Well, I'm talking about both the design and what kind of a structure they might have been part of.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Well, they speculate that it was some kind of a let's see, what is the actual word? I'm looking at the article right now as we speak.
Some kind of covered patio or something like that.
Yeah, yeah, something like that. And again, if that is true, yeah, that's right. If that is true, then that suggests that's a very upscale. I mean, that points to wealth. Your average family in 700 BC in the Middle East didn't live like that. And so this points to either a royal figure, the king himself, or to somebody that's very wealthy and probably connected to the royal family. So as I said in the first segment, you can't have this kind of wealth and ostentation if you're just a little outpost or a little village, but you would if you're a capital city at the center of what's really a small empire. And that, again, supports the biblical narrative. I mean, the biblical narrative talks about David establishing the kingdom. It talks about how the kingdom grew and became wealthy under Solomon. And so here we are, 200 and some years after the time of Solomon, and we see traces of that wealth and grandeur, and we're finding it right there in Jerusalem.
Does the extent of David's kingdom, the kind of resources necessary to, say, make structures that would hold not only these capitals, but I take it that similar design capitals have been discovered that are even larger than this. Does that say something about the prominence of David's kingdom, too?
I think it does. It goes together because, you know, Jerusalem is not the only place we've excavated. You know, obviously, we've excavated at Babylon, at Susa, in various locations in Egypt, various locations in Greece, Rome itself. And so we have a pretty good idea of how the ancients in various periods of time in various regions, how they did their building. And it's almost like a pyramid. The closer you get to the center where the power is, the higher up you go, and you see grandeur and beauty and design and so on. And that's the part, of course, that survives. It's been made out of stone. It's big. It's heavy. It's not like wooden sheds and shacks that a lot of people lived in, or tents that all disappear. These are the big buildings and the grand buildings. They're also the ones that can get dismantled and reused, which complicates things. So I think these are all indicators that Jerusalem was the capital of a significant, not huge, but a significant empire that flourished for several centuries.
Does the style of the carving tell us anything at all, or is it purely decorative? Does it connect us to any other artifacts that have been found?
Well, they do. That helps us in identifying ethnicity, sometimes religious affiliations. And so we see a pattern that shows up in coinage, shows up in the carvings on stone, shows up in decorations that appear on, say, pottery. My own area of expertise relates to the Herodian Temple, and I see Herodian Temple designs show up on ossuaries, the bone boxes in which people's remains, were later collected and preserved. And that's the same kind of thing. And so these are typologies, and so the typology gives us a pattern of, in this particular period of time, the building probably relates to the king who's doing this and the artwork that's being produced and the coins and everything else. And so these things do hang together. So designs and the artwork are not just happenstance. They almost always have meaning and help us in trying to identify the politics, the sociology, the region, and other things like that that are very important for tying it all together.
And does the location of the discovery, talk about it being a promenade, does that have any significance too?
Well, of course, because view is important. You know, we have that probably the most interesting tale about view relating to David himself and Bathsheba. But, people wanted breeze. You know, they wanted to be on the west side of the city. So they were catching the breeze that came in from the Mediterranean Ocean. That's why there were no tombs and burial on the west side, because they didn't want those aromas to pass by. So view was important, fresh air was important, the right kind of sunlight and so on. And the wealthy people, and of course anybody who's been in Jerusalem, there is a series of hills, lots of elevations. And so it's not at all surprising that you have a promenade balconies, things like that, that are concerned with view and with fresh air and things like that.
So given just the archaeological evidence, if we could divorce it for a second from the biblical account, which we both regard as thoroughly reliable in itself as history, but given just the archaeological evidence, what can we say beyond a shadow of a doubt about the extent and the place of this kingdom that is attributed to David?
I think what the evidence shows is that there's no question that there was a kingdom, a significant kingdom, for just over 200 years, probably 250 years. And the evidence is just too extensive. There's too much of it. Some of it is quite specific, like the Tel Dan inscription that actually says House of David, which is basically saying the Davidic dynasty. So I don't see how you can talk your way out of a kingdom of David that lasted for over 200 years and was substantial. And of course, the biblical record says that it actually lasted for well over 300 years, but the archaeological evidence, I think, would establish it at least 200 to 250 years.
Dr. Craig Evans is Distinguished Professor of Christian Origins and the Dean of the School of Christian Thought at Houston Baptist University. He's author of numerous books, including Jesus and His World, The Archaeological Evidence. You can purchase this book at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Talk On Demand Archives. Dr. Evans, thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
When we come back, coming off this Labor Day, we're going to talk about the influence of Christianity on labor and economic freedom. Dr. Alvin Schmidt will join us. He is the author of the book, How Christianity Changed the World. Thanks to a generous donor, we've purchased a building for the new studios and offices of Issues Etc., Lutheran Public Radio, and The Word of the Lord Endures Forever.
The donor will match up to $200,000 for the purchase and renovation.
The entire cost is approximately $375,000.
You can view an architect's rendering and make a special tax-deductible gift at issuesetc.org
or call 618-223-8385.
Thanks for your consideration.
It's been 6 years since Ad Crucem started advertising on Issues Etc., and we are so grateful for the support we have received from Pastor Wilkin and his team. In that time, we have increased our inventory substantially. We've added ornaments, church banners, jewelry, posters, and much, much more. But we still offer beautifully printed, theologically sound greeting cards that need no correction. So put away that Sharpie and come on over to adcrucem.com. That's adcrucem.com.
This is Major A.J. Vogel, United States Army.
And this is Pastor Josh Leigaber of Trinity Lutheran Church, a confessional liturgical congregation located at Leesville and Fort Polk, Louisiana.
If you ever find yourself at Fort Polk, we invite you to join us to receive the gifts of Christ in word and sacrament.
For more information, visit us on Facebook or at trinityleesville.com.
Ars moriendi, the art of dying well. If death is the punishment for sin, then how does one die well? Well, that's the question we ask and answer in the September issue of The Lutheran Witness. We ask and answer the most common questions, fears, and doubts faced by Lutherans and Christians as they approach death. To subscribe, visit cph.org/witness. cph.org/witness. The Lutheran Witness, helping you interpret the world from a Lutheran perspective.
Your comprehensive source for information, teaching, and truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
This week on The Word of the Lord Endures Forever, we continue our study of St. Matthew with Judging Others, Ask, and It Will Be Given. The Golden Rule in the Narrow Gate. False prophets, and hearing and doing. Join me, Pastor Will Wheaton, for The Word of the Lord Endures Forever, your daily 15-minute, verse-by-verse Bible study on demand at thewordendures.org and on the Lutheran Public Radio app.
Remember when education was about the fundamental skills of reading, writing, and arithmetic, and about reading great literature and studying history to give our kids a model for what it is to be a good person? Memoria Press's classical Christian curriculum offers that very model for your homeschool. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR20. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.